This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome back to the podcast. If you haven't seen it already, we have a new video on our main channel. It is called the GR Snowrolla. We went snow rallying in the GR Corolla in Steamboat, Colorado, and it was just a funny piece. Also, there's a lot of behind the scenes on that piece, but ultimately it was one of those press launches things we went to, which normally have a lot of time carved out to do shooting, and this one didn't. We were understood that it would, but that it didn't. So we had to kind of figure out at the end of the day how to get our piece done, and we're actually pretty proud of the results. So we'd love for you to watch that. It was the first time you and I, you've said it a couple times in the piece, got to actually treat the GR Corolla like a rally car.
Snowrolla.
Well, it is. It's the GR Snowrolla.
Good news, everyone. Porsche has announced the Taycan Turbo GT. With the Weissach package, it starts at $230,000, and you don't get a back seat. So they've pulled the GR Corolla thing. I don't think it's a snow roller, but still, it's Taycan like a GR Corolla at the Weissach package level. So you have a four-door car without a back seat.
They've made it less usable.
But it's quicker around track. As a matter of fact, it's the quickest, most powerful Porsche ever. On February 23rd, 2024, the Turbo GT Weissach completed a lap at the WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, where we were just at. We weren't there for this event. Minute 27:87, faster than any other EV before it. And then in early January, a development prototype lapped the ring in 7 minutes, 7 seconds.
First off, if you don't know how those numbers line up, both of those numbers are blistering for a street car. They are blisteringly fast. However, there are plenty of race cars with far less horsepower that have topped those numbers. So this is just a bragging rights car. No back seat. Here's my 1,100 horsepower four-door that is actually just two-seat, but four-door. I guess there's storage in the back. I don't know. And so we can say we did it, which means somebody else is going to come along to beat this to say they did it.
Well, that has turned into kind of a match between Tesla and Lucid and Porsche now, because they all go to all of those tracks, and whoever's the fastest one around the track. Now, I am encouraged by this because that means EVs are using corners. They're turning corners. Mm-hmm. It's not just all straight line acceleration, which is how EVs have been sold up to this point. Porsche has made a legacy and a history of selling cars based upon lap times at the ring.
True, yeah.
Other manufacturers have too.
Yeah, for sure.
But still, I don't know that any of these manufacturers saying, we were tenths off the Lucid. We're like third best, or we're first, or we're second, or whatever. So buy our car, because if you don't take any of these to the track, then why did you buy it?
It's
if you buy the Turbo GT with the Weissach package, the only place for it is on track for $230,000+. That's the starting price. But if you're going to do that, why not get a GT4 RS or a GT3 RS or any other GT car?
Or why not buy an old beat down Miata and have a great day at the track?
And save $210,000?
Everything but like the last $5,000. You spent 295, you saved 295 grand, and the extra $5,000 was to buy yourself a Miata that you have a great day at a Hooked on Driving track day. And you probably have more fun than the guy in the Porsche who's probably trying to survive. Because unless you are the race driver chasing this time, that car's probably a little terrifying.
I'm sure it's very terrifying. I'm sure it's very quick on the straight.
It's blinding all over the place. I mean, this is this is an amazing accomplishment. But as we've seen already, EVs, they're crazy fast. But they're also crazy heavy. There will always be another faster one. It's the old boat joke. Not that this relates to me at all, but it's the old boat joke. The guy thinks he buys the biggest boat in the harbor until somebody else pulls up in a bigger boat. I mean, there's no stopping this.
No, there
and
isn't.
And it doesn't make, I know this is crazy because this is a car show and I do like fun cars that do fast things, but a faster car didn't make it better. I know that's controversial.
Although that's what we aspire to buy, as all of us enthusiasts and crazy track nuts, we like to get the thing that is the faster, or at least aspire to it, but the people actually buying and actually using it, it does come down to the driver's skill to extract the fastest time. You can't just say, well, I bought the fastest car, therefore I'm fastest person on track, because no, you're not.
True.
There might be somebody in a slow car that is such a better driver that they will show you how it's done. But if Porsche is doing this with the Taycan, imagine this technology inside of a Cayman. And we've also heard the 911 hybrid is coming, mm-hmm. even though they're treading carefully with the 911, the hallowed 911, even though there has been the prior generation, that 997 911 mm-hmm. that was a hybrid, the 919, a bunch of different hybrids. So they do have hybrid. Correct. They do have hybrid technology throughout their history, and they're yeah. now applying that to the 2025 911 from what we understand. But imagine the Cayman with half the power to
it's
fit it in that
crazy
package.
Powerful.
It's going to be quick and
very
probably pretty amazing. It's just longevity on track. And that's, I think, what the next step. It's not about just the lap time itself. It is about lasting a 20 or 30 minute session, or how long can that go, and what kind of chargers can it use?
Well, and as you and I have said before, various cars, depends on how big a car we're talking about, but between 300 and 400 horsepower is plenty.
It's a
for
99%
of the population.
Yes.
You will never need more than that. If you launch a car right now and it doesn't have upwards of 700 horsepower, people just don't even pay attention. It's like, well, you have only have 500
true.
Horsepower? Wow, what are you talking about? I mean, it's crazy how we've gotten there, but that's where we are.
One of the world's best car designers has passed, Marcello Gandini, who has designed Alfas and Bugattis, Citroens, De Tomaso. He designed the De Tomaso Pantera.
Mm.
He did Fiats and Jags and Lamborghini, most notably the Countach. Many Lamborghinis, a lot of Maseratis, Renault 5 Turbo, Volkswagens, Volvo. He passed at age 85, and he is the inspiration not only for many other people around the world in the design business, but for many people getting into the field of car design. He has been a pinnacle, so we mourn his passing. He has been incredibly prolific, but done some amazing car designs.
Some of the best known in the world were penned by him. It's amazing.
1972 BMW 5 Series, that 74 Lamborghini Countach, the 68 Lamborghini Mira,
mm-hmm.
the 1970 Lancia Zero concept.
You could
Fantastic.
Argue that all of the wedge shapes come from Gandini, and you could also argue that Lamborghini is Lamborghini today because of the Mura and the through line of Gandini. You could absolutely argue
Couldn't
that.
Couldn't agree more. While we're at Laguna Seca, we drove the 2024 Mazda CX-90. Our test drive was with the plug-in hybrid mm-hmm. electric vehicle version. It's a 2.5-liter engine with a 68-kilowatt motor. But we had the inline six.
We finally drove the
new inline six, which was what we wanted to drive.
Mm-hmm. I want to drive the Turbo S. They're super fast, but at some point we need to drive all of the versions, apparently. But this is the middle version. So not the plug-in hybrid, but the lower version, still decent amount of power with the straight six.
It's got the 48-volt mild hybrid technology on it, making 280 horsepower, 332 pound-feet of torque out of that inline six. So it's the turbo. It's not the Turbo S. Mm-hmm, I like how mm-hmm. Mazda is adopting Porsche's
yes, Porsche nomenclature. There they go.
Which
yep.
is great, but all for $54,000, almost $55,000. We do like it a lot. Seven-seater, mm-hmm. great seating, great build quality. This actually changes the character of how it drives for me, and I liked this one. I really couldn't get into the PHEV.
I struggled with the PHEV as well. This one is not some standout of, oh my gosh, you must drive this engine, but it didn't annoy me at all. And the PHEV, I felt like I kept wanting it to have a personality it didn't have. I'm a guy that owns a PHEV. I understand the benefit of plug-in hybrids. I get it. But I feel like this straight six feels properly mated with this CX-90. And it's got a very nice interior and a good amount of space. This is an excellent vehicle. The one we drove, if you watch our test drive on it, we liked it except for the powertrain. This solves the powertrain problem. I can only imagine that the Turbo S elevates it further.
Be even quicker, which we like, but of course more money. This still has a 5,000 pound towing capacity.
Mm-hmm.
It does look good. I could get into this one.
I hate the fact that we haven't been sent one in the really good red color.
Yeah, why
this was white, which was just
rhodium
and
white.
And it had a really a light interior, which wasn't. I just kept thinking, how dirty is this interior going to get? But of course, we had a press car.
Very.
And we didn't throw Cheerios around, in spite of what we're normally like. So it did okay. Couple of pieces of news for you. If you don't know already, we're always talking about our trips and the fun that we're having. And guess what? The first of the trips is going live. In fact, today, Friday that you're hearing this, the Utah meetup has gone live to patrons. They get first crack at it, and they have a tendency to dogpile on this one. I'm just letting you know. But there are a few slots available for first-timers. Hopefully by the time it goes live for everybody else on Saturday morning, there are some of those slots for first-timers left. This is about 20 cars. This is the highlight roads of Utah. We start here in Park City. We do our favorites, and people have come back multiple years. It's just an epic, epic couple of days of driving. So we hope you'll come for that. That is on the Adventures page on our Everyday Driver website. So everydaydriver.com, you can find it there. But then also, I don't know if you noticed, but our pilgrimage trip came and went registration-wise. It hasn't happened yet.
Already, yes.
But our pilgrimage trip came and went.
Yes.
The registration, it filled up like in 24, 48 hours. I couldn't believe how fast this one went. And so as a result of demand from the Hooked on Driving audience and demand from you guys, we're going back to the Ring and Spa again this year in the fall. This will be our third trip. There is one happening in April, May with the Hooked on Driving folks. There is ours happening over Father's Day, and we are going back again. If you did not get into either of those other trips, we would love to have you on this latest trip. This is October 13th to 18th, 2024. So it is in the fall. That is actually a time when there's still pretty good weather in Europe.
I mean, you can have warm days and great weather.
It might rain, but there's nothing wrong with going there. We've been that late before.
Well, it's also Belgium. It might rain at any point.
It could rain, yes, because the sun's up. I mean, it doesn't matter. Oh, hey, guess what? It's sunny right now. Oh, look, it's raining. I mean, that's really
exactly
how spa works.
Exactly.
So anyway, that is currently live on the Hooked on Driving site. So hookedondriving.com. It should be the first thing that pops up right there on the carousel registration for that. We are open to your questions about that one. Just so you know, that's structured a little bit differently than the everyday driver trips. It's going to start with a day of driving open pit lane on the Nürburgring, which is going to be amazing, followed by 2 days of back-to-back driving on spa, where you can really refine spa, and then a really cool kind of the hills and wineries of Germany actually on the last day, which is going to be really cool. Not the way we structure it, but it's going to be really a lot of fun. So that is three big track days on two iconic racetracks in October. So we hope you'll be with us.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
Varun writes to us. He's in the greater Boston area for our first car debate, feeling the need for some fun.
Okay.
Varun, thank you for following us on YouTube. He says he recently started listening to the podcast. Now that he's driving to work, he wishes he had started years ago, but you're right. That means you've got a lot of back catalog.
There is a lot of back catalog, man, but thanks for joining us.
Varun has had a Q5 for about a year and a half. It's been a good commuter and for road trip duties. It's a model year 2019 CPO certified Paul-owned car, but he's starting to want something more fun to drive. He has owned a few cars before that Audi Q5, including a 2013 BRZ manual transmission.
Like it.
A brief stint in a Jag F-Type convertible. After that was a 2019 Bullitt Mustang, then a 2020 WRX with a manual transmission, 2021 Challenger 392 Auto, and the 2022 GTI manual transmission as well, which had some issues.
Okay.
A GTI with issues.
He doesn't say. All right.
Strange. And now the Audi. He's enjoyed his V8s a lot, and he took them on mountain drives multiple times. He loved the sound and challenge of driving huge cars around two-lane mountain roads. Who doesn't like that challenge?
Yes, but at some point, I just go, I need a smaller car. Because on some level, the challenge just becomes, oh, look, I didn't die again. So you know what? Just get a smaller car. Anyway, he did enjoy it, though. That is very cool. He said he also enjoyed the GTI a lot on the same kind of drive. So he really enjoys these mountain drives. It's been a key thing for him. But he realizes he misses the manual transmission. He wants to get back into manual transmission. So he's looking at used Acura Integras with the 6-speed manual. He feels like that the extra niceties of the Integra over the base Civic Si, or it's not base, but the Civic Si, are actually worth it for him. But he's looking at the Integra. So front-wheel drive, fun, with a manual transmission, which many look at the Civic Si, which means he headed down the rabbit hole and found WRXs and Elantra Ns and went, well, those are pretty cool too. So he'd like to stay under about $35,000, but then he thought, you know, if I bump that up, you've clearly listened to the podcast at
exactly.
least once, Varun.
If you pay more, then you can spend more.
If you bump it up to the $40,000 to $45,000 mark, what about a used BMW M340i or an S5 or a Charger? But he says, oh, hang on, the Chargers won't be manuals. So this is what he's debating. But he did tell us, because of course you've listened, I'm thinking go back to a BRZ or a new one, get a new one. But he says, no, I need four doors. Otherwise, he would just go out and get an updated BRZ or GR86 and call it a day. So he's looking around at cars that have the four doors and the six-speed manual, which is a difficult combination these days. I can't believe that's become difficult, but it has, which got him thinking about that WRX six-speed manual. But he also has considered the Elantra N.
This car would replace the Q5 because he doesn't need and cannot justify two cars. It will be used for commuting and road trips with a family. He doesn't have kids yet, but does have parents. No, he doesn't have parents. Yes, he has parents, siblings, and their spouses. He's in the greater Boston area, as we mentioned, and he's all over the place. He needs some help. So what should he buy next? It sounds like, Varun, that you're open to lots of ideas.
Agreed.
I agree that you had some suggestions. You've also had a nice history. There's been some nice things in there, different powertrains, different engines, different drivetrains that I like that you've experienced that. But reading between the lines, I'm hearing you like V8 engines.
Agreed. I read that as well. I'm curious if you landed where I landed. Keep going.
I started with Dark Horse Mustangs and realized those are not $44,000.
They're not. They really, really aren't. I mean, the lower models are, but I think you may have to spend more than that just to get a GT.
I guess. Yeah, you do. And then I thought, okay, how about the sleeper? We like sleepers. Volvo S60s are cool sleepers, but it's not a manual.
No, unless you go way back. Yeah.
I like your M340 idea. That's a great idea. You could go get that one, and I think you would be very happy. I do love your Integra. I should add the Type S Integra on there, because if you haven't driven that, you might suddenly justify even more dollars.
Yeah, that 45 might become 50 something.
But it's so good.
It is so good.
The power is so good. It's such a great all-arounder. I know it's expensive and I know it's brand new, but maybe I'd say put the Type S on your list.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
But the car, Varun, you should buy is the 2022 Cadillac CT4V Blackwing with 14,612 miles for $46,999. I'll bet you they'll let you pay 46 grand.
I applaud you for finding that, because I thought they'd all be out of price.
They
well
most
done.
Were. This one has 14,000 miles. Huh. It's electric blue with a tan interior, 3.6 liter V6 twin turbo.
I want that car.
472 horsepower.
That sounds brilliant.
Yes. 14,000 miles, that's barely broken in.
Yes.
2022 model for $46,900. Offer them $46,000 flat, and they'll say, have a nice day. Here's your new car.
I am not going, I'm going to, because we're here and this is what we do, I'm going to go through my list, but I really think you just solved it.
CT4 Blackwing, slightly used, because I thought, no, I shouldn't check, because they're all going to be like 50, 60.
Bravo to you.
Most are. And then I scrolled and I found a hidden gem.
Auto Tempest comes through again. That's
Auto Tempest comes through.
Bravo on that. I didn't even bother to look at the Blackwings. I was like, that's above the
price.
Well,
that's what
point.
I was thinking.
Yes.
And I found a lot of them are 65, a lot of them are 55. And then, okay, what if something with more miles? And this one has only 14,612 miles.
That's amazing.
Miles?
Done. Great choice. I mean, Varun.
Quick, somebody buy this car. Varun, it better be you, but quick,
seriously.
Somebody buy this.
Varun, I actually... Wow, Paul's completely got me on the back foot now, because I think the WRX is a solid choice here, but not in the light of a CT4 Blackwing.
I mean, anyway, it's not a V8. The only thing wrong with it,
it's not
a V8.
But I'm going to try to solve this for Varun. I think the WRX is a solid choice. I don't love it, but you said you kind of like its rough around the edges feel. And I will say to you that the biggest problem I had with the last WRX we drove was that we were in the upper model trim and they only offered that in CVT.
Right.
Getting that car with a manual is really compelling. And now you're also not dealing with, it's just a front-wheel drive, it is an all-wheel drive. So that is a compelling choice. I want to talk about the Integra real quick. I like the Integra. It's cool. The problem that I have with it is the Type S is so much better that I have trouble recommending the Integra, okay?
It's more expensive, but it's better.
It's
see,
just,
when you spend
it's
more,
just better
because, you get better.
But the other reason I bring it up, Varun, is because you are looking for fun. And I don't think the Integra, not the Type S, the Integra is fun enough. I think the SI, which you said is not nice enough, and I get that. I think it's quite a bit more fun than the actual Integra. We said that in our test drive. So if you're looking at Integra money and you're talking about front-wheel drive, six-speed manual, then I just go Elantra in, because it's going to have more niceties than the Civic SI. which is the problem you had with the Civic Si. The Si is kind of bare bones. It has more niceties, but it has personality and fun that the Integra can't match. So at that point, it is the Elantra N. I think the BMW 340i is interesting with the 6-speed, and you're right, you could get one, but why when you can get the CT4 Blackwing? However, I think I did solve it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
With his budget. I have an alt to your Blackwing, which I still do think might be the answer. Do you know what $45,000 really does get you? Our friend Varun, who needs four doors and manual transmission and wants fun and has said without saying how much he really likes V8s, you actually have a list of 6-speed manual Chevy SS in your budget. They're out there.
They are.
All of the above is available. Yes. Now, it's not going to be nice as the CT4 Blackwing, but it is a big grumbling V8, four real doors. You could actually transport people. It's going to be bigger than some of these other little sedans we've talked about. 6-speed manual Chevy SS, $45,000 gets you a list of them nationwide on Auto Tempest. I think the answer is SS. Or step up and get the Blackwing.
That's good. I mean, Varun, just imagine all the burnout fun that you're going to have introducing your parents, your siblings, and their spouses. They're going to beg to ride with you.
The smell of tire rubber. What's that in my suit? Oh, that's right. Yes.
That's right. Why do my clothes stink? Varun, thank you for riding. Really appreciate you listening. Please pass along the podcast to others who might benefit and enjoy being entertained with our crazy ideas as well. Write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, for all your Topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions, and most of all, your car debates.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Aiden writes to us. He's 20 years old. He's a diesel mechanic and a Honda fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, is it okay to like boring cars?
Now, this is really interesting as we start to unpack this, because Aiden has done a thing that we all do as car lovers. We do it in general. Hopefully, you're all self-examining yourself. But he is
looking inwards.
He has self-diagnosed his car disease, and his conclusion. The evidence is interesting, but it's like what happens when you look up what your symptoms are on WebMD, and you find the thing that's, yes, you could check the boxes, but you shouldn't be over there having that
conclusion.
Never
self-diagnose on
WebMD. Never do that.
You will instantly think you're dying, and it's a countdown.
I'll tell you, you're all dying. We're all dying. Aiden has said his conclusion about his car disease is that he likes boring cars. I don't think that's the conclusion here, but it's an interesting place to start.
He's turning to us because he's worried that he might like boring cars. He's currently driving an 08 Honda Fit manual. He loves it.
Okay.
Super fun to throw around the corners on the daily commute. Gets great fuel economy. It's in perfect shape. It needs nothing. He recently got it this winter and was looking forward to putting suspension and some nice wheels and tires on it for summer because it's currently running winter tires. Aiden, you're listening. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
Great. Great stuff.
His car history consists of three, count them, Acura RSX Type S's. Three. RSX's three. Type S's.
And some 4Runners thrown in. So it's like RSX 4Runner, RSX 4Runner. He's had three of them and multiple 4Runners, a few other SUVs thrown in there for mountain activities. He said he loved every single RSX, but buying three back-to-back was definitely a missed opportunity to try something new. Hell, that may be the Captain Obvious sentence of the year. And we're early yet. It's still early in the year.
It's true.
Three RSXs back-to-back was a missed opportunity. I agree, Aiden.
The Fit, he says, drives similar to the Acuras. It just feels slower.
Okay.
Now, Aiden's girlfriend has a 2011 Volvo S60 T6 all-wheel drive with every option available. They got it for an absolute steal at $5,000. Aiden's desperately in love with his girlfriend's Volvo.
Does she know? Oh, sorry, separate thing.
She does now.
She does now, yeah.
It's so comfortable and powerful. It feels like the perfect daily driver. Aiden's never owned a car with heated seats, adaptive cruise control, or any other amenities that it currently has.
This is great stuff.
But it's nowhere near as fun as the Hondas that Aiden's used to. Mm-hmm. The steering is numb, it weighs nearly 4,000 pounds, and he can't place exactly what he loves so much about it, but it's been such a pleasure to drive that he's been stealing it from her and leaving the Fitz keys behind for her.
Which sounds like a difficult move, except here's the twist. She's come to despise that Volvo. She calls it her narc car because of the beeps and parking sensors and constant
narc car.
It's reporting on her constantly.
Yes.
That it doesn't like her driving. Lane departures, all of the above. She used to have a 1998 Toyota RAV4 manual and wants to get rid of the Volvo for another Toyota manual because she wants something that doesn't constantly bark at her. So he's considering, should I just buy the Volvo off of her? Will I miss out on the fit? And then what does she end up with? The two of you are reversing roles in the middle of this
That's
email.
True.
Yeah.
The car debate is actually for Aiden's girlfriend because
by default it is, yeah.
Aiden says he would really love to buy the Volvo off of her, but he's worried about missing out on the fun from his fit.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot keep both because they're in the process of buying a house and need all the extra cash they can get. Should he sell the Fit and buy a more luxurious car? Try out a more luxurious car for a while. Should he just wait until summer and put nice tires on the Fit so then he can see what it's really capable of? He's having a very tough time with this. See, it's his girlfriend's debate because, Aiden, you love the Volvo. You're at a time in your life where you guys need to save some money. Mm-hmm. Your girlfriend wants to go back to some other older manual Toyota, so I say, brilliant, yes. But the question really is about for the listening audience. Is it okay for all of us to like boring cars?
We are the guys that actually tracked a Prius, aren't we? Aren't we those guys?
Right.
And we cackled the entire time. Yeah.
And you took your Phaeton out onto the salt flats.
I did, yes.
I took my Maserati, mm-hmm. too.
Well, but it's interesting you bring up the Phaeton because I think the Phaeton speaks a little bit to Aiden's situation.
Is that a boring car?
I think it could be argued. Because, Aiden, here's the thing. You've had light, low-rent, very fun cars, which is how I would argue that's the Lotus Elise. I mean, it's at a higher price point, but it is a light, low-rent car. It's very well designed for what it does. One of my favorite things about it that makes me laugh is if somebody drives that car at 10 miles an hour, they think, well, this creaks a lot and it has a lot of stuff. But what's interesting is at 100 in a corner on the track, it feels exactly the same. A lot of cars at 10 miles an hour, it's like you're completely shielded. At 100, you're like, this is going to fall apart. At 100 in the Lotus, it's just like, those are all the same creaks I've been hearing since I left the house. There's no problems, okay? So the thing about the Phaeton is we bought those as a joke. We bought these really formally expensive executive cars as a joke. Yeah, true. But I also fell in love with that Phaeton in spite of its problems for all the reasons that Aiden is liking this Volvo, because for the first time in my life, I had a car that its entire purpose was just to pamper me. It wasn't about driving. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about being light. It was about how much weight can we get in here so I can just give you back comfort. And Aiden's going, huh. He's had beat down 4Runners, old RSXs, and now a Honda Fit. And it's the first car you come across, I hate to say it this way, Aiden, with technology and luxury. I submit to you, that's why you like the Volvo. There's nothing stand out about that Volvo other than it's brought to you a nice, luxurious experience, which I experienced in the Phaeton. And I will be honest, in all the stuff we've driven, having that car has given me a new appreciation for when we have other luxury vehicles.
Mm. Aiden, question to you, I guess a question to the audience. Are Teslas boring? I mean, everybody's bought a Tesla, and I kind of think they're boring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But man, they're so good for what they do. Everybody wants a Tesla.
The Model Y is one of the most successful cars in the world.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing about it. Pick your year. The cars that were typically the most successful in sales were rarely flamboyant. They're generally cars that do their job very well for a decent price with a decent amount of amenities. But generally, the car that is the best-selling car, nobody's going to be like, those are amazing to drive. They're fine because they appeal to that general audience and people enjoy them and they do their job very well, which is the Model Y.
It was interesting to find and discover a personality lurking inside the new Prius because that is a boring car.
Yeah.
It doesn't look boring anymore.
Yeah.
But inherently speaking, a Prius, that's a boring car. But then we discovered, you know what? It's kind of quick and there's a little bit of personality here and we went to exploit that. I want to exploit it further by having Toyota build me a GR Prius. However, it's okay because we don't need the hair on fire car all the time. I mean, we think we want that all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's why most of these SUVs that are kind of all the same, what is the differentiator? Style
that's good.
And amenities.
That's
but that's
good.
Based on how much you paid. If I pay more for any car company's midsize 5-seat SUV, I can get all the same amenities.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you're experiencing that, Aiden, all those wonderful little things, that the niceties, the things that we like. But if I just pay more, I get more. The Mercedes S580 is inherently kind of a boring car, but it's really not.
We were sad to see it go. Both times we've had one, we were like, oh, there it goes.
Because of all the things it can do, there's so much more to it. But inherently, it's just a large, expensive sedan.
I'll go you one further on the S580 that we just had. And I felt this way with the Genesis G90, and I felt it with,
that's a good one.
The big Lexus LSs and this kind
of
stuff.
That's a boring car that I totally want to be in.
That's the thing. These are cars that when I'm driving them, how well they drive is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Which is, I kind of felt that way about the Phaeton. I mean, it survived the salt flats and a lot of road trips and that kind of stuff. But
and a suspension failure.
The driving fun didn't even make the list. And I'm a guy that really cares about driving fun.
It was just
like, I'm driving the S580 going, it's powerful enough. It turns when I need it to. Oh, look, it has rear steer. I can actually get in that small parking space. Mm-hmm. But really, what am I liking? Everything else.
I feel like most of the automotive landscape is kind of boring. I mean, there's style out there. There's some beauty. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of cool technology. There's a lot of things to entertain us and surprise and delight us, and good seats and good tech and good amenities. And for the most part, it's not an exciting car to drive. But do you want to drive a really exciting car in context where you can't take advantage of it, like commuting?
Mm-hmm.
No, you do not.
Yeah, fair.
I don't want to be in an exciting car where I can't use it to its potential.
Yeah.
This is why, Aiden, we talk about getting the right tool for the job. And it doesn't have to be extremes of that. It can be mildly exciting, something that you've never had in your life. That's why the cheap stuff, the Miatas, the GR86s, all those are so great. But I think it's absolutely okay to like boring cars because of the job that they need to do in your life. I kind of find a lot of pickup trucks sort of boring.
Mm.
Man, are they capable.
But they can
Man,
be very
is
successful.
A lot of power.
Yeah, sure, sure.
None of those categories matter to me, but for many people it does. But every car is different. I think a lot of EVs are kind of boring.
I hear that. I hear that. Aiden, the big thing that I took away from this email when I read it is you and your girlfriend together and separately need to do lots and lots of drive homework.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have driven very few things, and you're using the few things you've driven, we all do this, as touch points for do I like A or B? And you've forgotten that there's C through Z out there and you haven't driven any of them.
That's true.
So I want you guys to drive lots and lots of things. Also, I want to encourage you that you've slightly misdiagnosed yourself. It's not that you like boring. It's just that you're ready in your life to have a car that has some amenities.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't had that. What's interesting is I feel like you and your girlfriend need to swap spots on the kind of cars you have. Whether you keep the Volvo or not, I think the Volvo and the Fit could both go, but I don't know what your budgets are if we go that far. But what I really want you to do is I want her to drive cars and trucks from the mid-90s to early 2000s.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's when her RAV4 was from. But there's actually some good options out there in general, cars and trucks. But that's before all the nannies showed up. Because the problem is, and I hate to say this and your girlfriend's not listening, but the problem is she's not going to like where cars are going. The hottest cars out there are still warning you of stuff. Like the cars focused for enthusiasts now because of regulation and all this kind of stuff, they're all warning you of stuff. I hate to say it, but it's becoming much more common. So the only way to get around it is to get before it. So if that really is what bugs her, she's got to go late 90s, early 2000s. But here's the thing you may not realize is that, Aiden, modern performance cars are also nice.
Mm-hmm.
They've all gained these amenities. So you can find fun with amenities. Because you like that Fit so much, I think you need to drive a recent GTI.
Okay. Yeah.
And you need to drive a Veloster N.
Yes.
I feel like the Veloster N might actually do it for you because it's going to have the frantic nature of what you've liked of your front wheel drive, your Mini, your RSX collection. And also your Fit.
Aiden does have an RSX collection,
but
doesn't he?
The Veloster N actually has a decent amount of amenities and a good amount of tech. So I think you'd be pleasantly surprised by that. If you want to go nicer than that, this is where the GTI brings fun, but actually a surprising amount of amenities. A Mark 7 GTI is a pretty nice place to be, but yet it's awfully fun on a back road in that good front-wheel drive, chuckable way. I don't want you to go so far into amenities that you wind up with a car that's not fun anymore. There's a middle ground here, and I think you can find it.
Aiden, I've got a thought to leave with you and the listening audience, and that is I feel like the amenities that you're experiencing and you're loving is the reward. And all of us are somewhat cyclical in our taste through life.
Oh, that's good.
Because you had some crappy cars.
I did.
As a young driver.
yes, I did.
But then when you started to experience some luxury, it felt like I'm moving up in life. I'm making some money. This feels like a reward. Mm. But you still didn't really care about the driving experience. And then later in life, you might experience some money come in and you buy a stripped down, lightweight, really driver's focused car. And now that feels like the reward because you're tired of all the luxury.
That's fair.
You've been coddled and cosseted and you've been in the nest. You've been driving around in a nest on wheels. And you're tired of it.
I'm going to jump out of the nest at this next off ramp. Yes. I'm jumping. Here I go.
But then driving something that's really hardcore and that really speaks to additional skills you've learned throughout your life. Mm. And what a it's so vibrant to drive. It's alive with driving excitement. And then you think, huh, this is a reward that I haven't been experiencing. Mm. I wonder, I'm speaking generally because I know that both you and I have experienced that in our lives. And the harder core cars that we've experienced feels like more and more of a reward. And those are the ones that are less amenities and less stuff on them because they're so focused on the purpose of driving and that excellent feel and man versus machine and extracting, using my skills to extract an amazing feeling out of that car through a corner, whatever. Mm. That's what I think you're going to experience. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, but you're in this amenity phase. Enjoy that phase. Buy the Volvo.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You guys have been stacking up lots of great questions over the past week or so, and we have been compiling some, so there's a lot to get through. Some about hooked on driving, some about cars, some about all kinds of things. There's a really good car debate kind of would you rather question in here. There's so many great stuff. I'm going to start right here with Seth Kleinman, who says, any chance of Mid-Ohio sports car course being in the Hooked on Driving network? Seth, there are many tracks we want to add.
That's a good point.
All I'm going to say to you is, yes is the long answer. The short answer is not right now, man. We are working really hard to add tracks. We're looking hard to add franchisees. There's a lot of conversations going on across the board. And at the same time, we don't want to break anything that currently is working. So thank you. What I would encourage is, guys, keep sending us. We would like you guys to be at track X, because we may be able to put a bunch together and create a new franchise around two or three tracks in your area. Mm-hmm. We're all for that, so keep it coming.
Justin Schultz, Cars and Cycling, says, the beginning of the podcast was funny. Last episode, I go on and on about how the new Charger design isn't beautiful or new enough. And I did. Mm-hmm. Looks like a Charger. He says, kind of like how the 911 hasn't changed since the beginning of time.
Zing!
You totally zing me. Uh-huh. You're right. I talk myself into a corner, but I still disagree because I do feel like the 911 has morphed and changed from a very small, purposeful shape to what it is now. I think today's 911 looks nothing like what it did 50 years ago, now 60 years ago. The proportions have changed. It's the same roofline, centerline shape, but I feel like the front end design has changed dramatically. I feel like the body sides, the proportions, the width, I think the style, it has actually changed more than the Charger has. I feel like the 911 is taking a classic design and looking forward. I feel like the new Charger is taking the classic design and looking backwards for inspiration.
Okay. I'm going to leave
it's
you alone
semantics,
there. It is semantics.
It could be a lot of bias involved, and I admit that. Freely, I admit that. But I still feel like the evolution of the 911 is going in a better direction than the evolution of the Charger.
Interesting. I'm really excited to drive the new Charger. I'm very, very excited.
I want to drive it too. Yeah. I hope to just be wildly impressed.
Mm.
I want something on the body side that makes it interesting.
I want to drive it in all the variants too. I can't believe, I know I beat this to death, but I can't believe how many variants Dodge has done on that. That I'm very, very impressed. Bill Taylor on Facebook said, what are our thoughts? I think you're actually pointing this at me. On the Lotus Type 135, it's going to be the world's first lightweight electric sports car. Now, Lotus has announced this and said, I can't believe this. I really can't believe they've done this. They are still struggling to get Emiras, the current Lotus new car, delivered in the U.S. But that hasn't stopped them from announcing the car that's going to replace the Emira. I'm actually sitting here wondering, has that ever happened in the history of cars? Has there ever been a car maker who said, oh, so we're selling you this one right now. It hasn't come out yet, but it's about to be in driveways near you. But let me tell you about the one behind that. Has anybody ever done that? This is like, this is shooting yourself in the foot 101. What are you doing?
That's true.
The difference is, of course, the Amira is being advertised as their last internal combustion engine car. We shall see. The Type 35 is kind of an Amira slash Elise replacement that's going to be all electric. And they're talking about stacking the weight, the batteries and the engine in the mid-engine driving position. What do we think? I'm fascinated by this. I hope it's great. As a guy that loves my Elise, as a guy that likes all the modern low tie, I really hope it's wonderful. This is them talking about a car from 5+ years from now, and they haven't even delivered the current one. I hope it's good. I'm going to come down to the thing I keep saying about electric cars. What's it going to weigh?
Yeah.
Because if it's 3,500 pounds to 4,000 pounds, meaning weighs more than the Amira, they've done it wrong.
Agreed.
If they can get it under 3,000 pounds with that EV pack weight behind the driver, it will differentiate it from everything else on the market, and then they might sell some.
Jorge M. on Instagram says, can we name the elements or parts that we would take from the Taos? I say we. I mean, it's pointed at me.
Paul, what do you like about
it's,
the Taos?
It's not the collective we.
What's me. What is that,
Jorge,
list?
Again.
Is there anything? Yeah.
Okay. Name the elements or parts I would take from the Taos, the updated Kona, and my favorite canoe.
So all the three you've raged against the design of, what would you take as and say, I'll take that with me?
I would take the size of the Kona because it is a good size.
It's a very good size. Very usable size.
The Taos has a traditional front end, headlights where you think they should be.
Okay.
Air intakes where you think they should be.
Okay.
In the most refined way of doing a modern SUV, it can't get more refined than that to make it look and go past to a non-traditional look to the Kona. That's about as traditional. Headlights are here. Grille is in the middle with an, you know, the shapes are fine, but it's just so tightly refined. Anything more than that, you have to start to go wacky and crazy and you have to make a Kona. So that is something that right now it still looks traditional, good. I do like those shapes. I do like the proportions, but then the size of the Kona and really nothing from the canoe, not even the name. The Kona,
but they're great NASA vehicles.
They are. I loved your Airstream trailer connection.
It's what it is.
That was fantastic.
Anyway, yeah.
But the Kona is trying things for the sake of different.
Mm.
When you make a next generation of anything, it should improve, should it not?
Theoretically, yes.
It shouldn't just be change for the sake of change. It's like any design of any chair or clothing or whatever. You put a line different here. Well, it's different, but did it make it better? Is it constant improvement?
Mm.
The proportion and what the Kona does and the value it provides, as we said in the review, it's excellent. The styling is quite polarizing, and I feel like Hyundai's designers are just trying lines. We're just trying stuff. And
I could put something there.
There was a team for the front of the car. There was a team for the body side. There was a team for the roof. There was a team for the greenhouse. There was a team for the back end.
The business card that says body side design.
Yeah.
Not the front or the back.
No.
I just do body
That's
side.
Great.
That's all I do.
And none of them are located near each other.
No. No, no. I'm at the new plant.
This might have been designed with everybody still at home.
That's very, very good.
I'm guessing.
I like it. The Bruce B. on Instagram says, what if EV makers were electronically limiting 0 to 60 times to 5.5-6 seconds? Would it mean that the slower 0 to 60 capability would increase the range? Because isn't 5-6 all we need on a day-to-day basis? Yes, that is all we need. But Bruce, this is self-selecting. And what I mean by that is the cars that can do blistering 0 to 60s that are electric, you can't do that and get the advertised range. You can go get the crazy power, but you're watching the battery deplete. Okay? If you want to get the range, you need to not do that and not like any other car. You need to drive very conservatively if you want range, or you need to drive economy be damned if you'd like to go quickly.
Yes.
So the thing is, even if they limited it, the reality is these cars are being measured with different testing. We're going to take it out today, and we're going to do 0 to 60 as fast as we can because we don't care about the range. And we're going to charge it tonight, and then tomorrow we're going to drive it as gingerly as possible to see how much range it actually has.
Right.
And then we're going to put both numbers out, and we're going to suggest to the general public that both are possible. And they are, just not on the same day.
On Facebook, Barbara Peterson was really happy to see Hooked on Driving has nice zip-up hoodies for sale in both ladies and men's sizes. Is there a chance that anything being produced with the Everyday Driver logo? Do we have plans to expand the Everyday Driver clothing line and then combine merchandise sales for both brands into one website?
Oh, the plans, Barbara.
Many plans. That is a little bit less important than some other efficiencies that we need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
But we do want to expand both clothing lines because I have a very high quality in mind for the clothing that I want both brands to represent, and the designs. I want them to be clean, classy, long lasting, and not the same kind of merch that everybody prints logos on. That's frustrating.
Okay.
So if there's good brands that are still reasonably priced, I'm not saying, you know, we're rocking some crazy ski gear with a logo on it that's $1,200. That's not the point. But great jackets, really timeless, classic, clean looking designs. But as far as both logos on the same piece of clothing, is the connection there yet?
The only, you know, I thought about this recently because we had this question at the Laguna Seca track day we were just at. And I did think of one way we could do it.
Okay.
And that is the way we do our logo on Blip Shift shirts. The HOD logo at the pocket and the Everyday Driver logo at the nape of the neck. I think that is probably in the short term the way we can combine them. I don't know that they need to be side by side.
They don't necessarily, no.
Creating the connective tissue, that's kind of interesting.
And it needs to be like, you know, safety first and then something crazy car on the back.
There you go. Safety sideways, Hooked on Driving. Cass Lee is writing in and saying that he knows we hate white cars. We do.
Yep.
It's a separate thing. But he says, for super hot cities, what color other than white would we suggest to help keep the car cool during the day? Cass, I have an assignment for our friend Jason Finsky at Engineering Explained.
Ooh.
I would like somebody to put a bunch of car colors together in a really hot climate, and let's find out how much different the cabins get based on paint color. Because I wonder if that's what's mattering. I think you need the sunshades like Covercraft makes or many people make that actually block the sun from getting into that big glass enclosure there that you have to sit in later. I think that is part of it. I mean, I grew up in Texas. I know this is the traditional wisdom, never buy a black car in Texas. And all the trucks in East Texas where it's super, super hot, or West Texas, are all white for this reason. I get it. But you know what, Cass? Anything on the lighter end of the spectrum. Think about the light blues from Porsche. Think about the oranges that the Fiesta ST came in. Think about the lime greens you see supercars in. Any yellow on the planet, most reds, all of these are on the lighter end of the spectrum. They're going to reflect much more light than even a dark gray would. So anything that is a Skittles color, I submit to you, is probably going to reflect most of the light that the white's doing, and then you don't have white.
Anything not have white. On Instagram, R. Close says, now that there's a plethora of sporty SUVs and CUVs, is the next logical step a sporty minivan? Would there be a market for an Odyssey Type R or a GR Sienna?
Ooh. Odyssey Type R.
I like the GR Sienna.
The Odyssey.
Pacifica Hellcat. We've joked about that all the time. R. Close, I have a question for you about the Mercedes R-Class from 2012.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was an AMG. Let me ask you, how well did that sell? How long did that stick around in the portfolio of Mercedes cars to sell? And it seems fun. It seems like the right idea. But now you've got more passengers, so you've got more weight.
Okay.
Unless you're driving an empty, hot Odyssey Type R minivan by yourself, and then what's the point?
Why did you get a van?
So now you've added all these passengers who are now needing to be strapped into performance seats, so you've added weight, and now more people hate you of how you're driving than just the three that could have been in the sedan with you or the single person in the sports car with you. So now you've got like six people that hate your guts because of your crazy performance driving.
Making enemies in your performance minivan.
Right. So
I like it. It's good.
It seems like
stuff.
A fun, logical idea until you realize I'm making enemies of my family and friends by owning this car.
It's like the debate we did for Aiden where he's actually reached the place where he wants luxury. That's where the minivan skews. I mean, I still wonder why Dodge never did a Hellcat minivan.
That
kind of
makes
like
sense
it,
to just sit but, there and melt yeah. the tires into the mm-hmm. pavement, or make it all-wheel drive so all four tires just
sink.
The van goes nowhere. It just melts into
I like
the pavement
it. It's good
in
stuff.
A cloud of smoke.
Church of Petrol is writing in on Instagram. This is somewhat controversial, but I'm going to try to unpack it. He says, upstate South Carolina has tons of good roads, but most of them have no shoulder. For this reason, do we think it's acceptable to go British style? I never thought of it that way. Go British style and use some of the oncoming lane if you have a clear line of sight.
British style.
Okay. You're like British style. You're using the other side
of the
road.
That is what
I see where you're going.
Is defined as British style.
The rule really is, look, Paul and I, we don't encourage you to go out and drive aggressively or quickly, but obviously we've done it. Okay? We will continue to do it. It's how cars get tested. Okay?
Uh-huh. Yes.
We are very rigid about that double yellow line.
Yes.
We're very rigid about lane control. And I'm going to tell you two reasons. First off, it's important. Okay? Even if you've got great line of sight. But secondly, I think it trains you to properly position your car if you don't ever brake. Over the line, I mean. And I've seen plenty of people on back roads. We were driving, the last time we drove last year on our Colorado meetup, we drove Million Dollar Highway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tons of people, when they would see two switchbacks, would just take the straight line down the middle, and it always made me cringe. But the other part of the equation is, have you ever driven with somebody? We all have. You've driven with somebody that's driving along, and the road gets narrow, and there's a truck going by the other way, and they get really nervous. Why do they get really nervous? Because they're not used to navigating the actual scale of their car. And so you don't have that subconscious awareness of where you are in the lane. This is the reason I actually try to maintain really strict lane discipline, is because I don't want to get into a situation where I have to navigate this sharp corner and there is somebody coming the other way and I'm not sure I can do it. I want to subconsciously just know I can put myself in the lane and I turn in here and I will exit where I want to be and nobody's touching anybody. And I think the more you blur that line, the less you're getting the training necessary for the time when you need it.
You're right. And a series of chicanes, the only time to straight line that kind of thing is on track.
Well, then there's no lane lines.
Then there's no lane lines.
And there's curbing.
And there's curbing, but it's designed to take that line
You're right.
For the track,
yes.
Whereas a street isn't, because you don't know what's at the end of those S curves. You don't know what's after that. And the undulation and pitch of the road isn't like a racetrack.
Mm.
And it can cause accidents. It can throw your car out of control and do things that were unexpected. So leave it for the track.
Chad on Instagram has a question that I think we can unpack a lot of ways, but I'm going to try really quickly to unpack it. He says, two Corvettes. Just imagine two Corvettes. A C7.
Is this the beginning of a joke?
And a C8. Yeah, it seems like it. And then a priest walks in. No, separate thing. No, so two Corvettes. A C7 and C8. So the last of the front engine, the first of the mid-engine. Equivalent specs. So let's just say the 3LT with the Grand Sport, whatever you want to think about it.
Okay.
Equivalent specs. Which one and why? And does it change if it's the Z06? That's a great question, and here's my answer. I'm going to say C7 is the preference if my purpose is to drive it as hard as possible.
Hmm.
If it's going to be a background burner and a track car, I'm probably going to pick C7.
Really?
Because that chassis by that point was so wonderfully refined, and because of the nature of how that car handles, it's more prone to be oversteer than understeer because it is a front engine rear drive. Most mid-engine cars, not just the C8, most of them are set up to understeer unless you set it up perfectly for the corner.
Exactly. Mid-engine cars will push.
That's what they do. Yeah. So C7 for a back road burner or a track car, but if I was going to use it as a daily or I was going to road trip, I'd go C8.
Hmm.
Now let me flip this around the other way and say something a little controversial. I don't think anybody needs the Z06 of either of these cars.
That's a good point.
They were really powerful and very capable long before the Z06 of either one showed up. Now, I think the C6 Z06, because of that engine, is a very unique car, and that's for a very unique buyer. But I think the C7 Z06 was 650 horsepower supercharged, 650 horsepower and torque. It was nearly impossible to put that down anywhere without being put in jail. And in most racetracks, the car was more powerful than the track had space.
Yes, the race car versions were less powerful.
The C8 Z06 has the same problem. These are bragging rights amounts of power versus usable amounts of power. So my hot take is you don't even need a Z06.
I'm in agreement with you, but I would take the mid-engine. I do love the mid-engine feel of
the
cars.
The mid-engine is great.
I take the C8, even though you're right. It would need to be set up properly, a little bit different. Probably the race spec alignment would be good for that car. Ours is I think 1.5 degrees in the front and 1.0 in the back. So it's
ours is like halfway between stock and race.
Yeah, what the what GM recommends for the track setup. So
it's pretty great.
It's excellent. And I like that mid-engine feel so much. I mean, I know you do too, but
yeah, for sure.
I'd take it for everything. Guys, thank you for all your questions. Really appreciate it. Write to us all your thoughts. We love hearing from you guys.
Yeah,
and whenever you want to just drop us a line, you're thinking of us. We really appreciate that. And send all your daily kinds of questions to social media. We like covering those as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't forget all those dates. You can now register for the Utah Adventure at everydaydriver.com.
Mm-hmm.
And for the third Hooked On driving trip, 2 days on Spa, 1 day on the ring.
It's going to be awesome.
A little bit shorter trip. It's a little bit less expensive, but 2 days on Spa. Hello.
That's a great track to just work.
Go to hookedondriving.com. We're looking forward to next time as always. Cheers, everyone.